Yeah,
you gotta
take off.
All right. Ray, rock and roll.
Yep.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mac, named Tyler.
Hey, Tyler.
What's up, guys? I'd like to welcome you to the Journey Continues kickoff picnic. Yeah, buddy. So I want to open up with a moment of silence, serenity prayer. God.
Grant us serenity to accept the things that cannot change, courage to change the things that can, and wisdom to know the difference.
All right, so before we start, we have food. There's a bucket there for you get to pay, no act turned away. Please don't be hungry. We have merchandise back there for sale. Raffles over here. Restrooms down there. So, am I missing anything? No. Oh, please put your butts in the butt can if you're smoking. Clean up after yourselves, please. And could we please get the reading how it works?
Howdy, my name's Joe Maddox.
Hi, Joe.
If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make an effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made the recovery possible. One, we admit if we are powerless of our addiction that our lives become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives to the care of God at the end of the service. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and others to the exact nature of our wrong. Six, we are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly ask to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we harm and take willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people where possible, except when we do so, we injure them or others. Ten, we continue to take personal inventory when the wrong properly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to act and practice principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to see that we're well on our way. We feel that our approach to deep addiction is unrealistic. The therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you are like us, you know one is too many and a thousand is never enough. We put great emphasis on this. For we know when we use drugs in any form, or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately. We cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. There are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover.
Thank you,
Howdy. All right, 12 traditions.
Hi, my name is Stefan. I'm an addict.
What's Stefan?
The 12 traditions. You keep what we have on you. That's green for the individual comes in the 12 steps. So green for the group springs from our tradition. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that would tear us apart, all will be one. One, our common well-being comes first. Personal recovery depends on NA. Two, for our group purposes, the one ultimate, loving God as He makes us help in our group one. Our leaders are the trusted servants of the one God. Three, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop evil. Four, each group should be autonomous, accepting and granting matters affecting other groups or NA at all. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the end but still suffers. Six, NA group ought never endorse, finance, or any NA name to any related facility or outside of the body. That's problems of money, poverty, or prestige to vary from our primary purpose. Seven, every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, crying outside of other needs. Eight, our God is anonymous, should remain forever non-compulsory, but our sales and centers may close to the workers. Nine, NA has qualified that we work. But we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to the list. 10. Our God is anonymous and no opinion on outside issues. And then CMA
12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our foundation. Ever reminding us to keep these principles before the world.
Thanks, Devin. All right, it is my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. She's from New Ken, We Became Willing Group, Nicole C.
Hi, family. My name is Nicole, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Nicole.
My clean date's October 19th, 2016. I wasn't nervous until I started standing up here. Honestly, I anticipated not knowing anybody but Nicole, so I was like, oh, if I like slip up or tell a couple lies, like nobody's gonna know. But unfortunately for me, a lot of my coworkers are here. You know, events and days like today are so important, you know, like for multiple reasons. You know, we either come here because we're excited to fellowship and see our friends, we come here because we want to hear a speaker or listen to the literature, or we come here because it's an emergency and if we didn't, we might die. You know, early on in the very beginning, I remember I would come to these things and like, to be honest, Narcotics Anonymous was the last step for me. I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to stop using. I thought you were going to teach me how to smoke crack like a lady and like only get high on the weekends. I had no idea that I was going to come here and, you know, call this place my home. You know, my beginning journey started out like every great love story with a guy, the man of my dreams. We were in love from the second meeting on. And to be honest with you, though, like I needed that. You know, he is my husband today. We have a beautiful family, but like, it was the guy that kept me coming. You know, it wasn't the desire to stop using. It wasn't because I thought meetings were really cool. I really thought you guys were all full of shit. And the second you left, you were going to meet the dealer and getting it in. Like, I did not believe any of what I was hearing. And honestly, I didn't even hear the readings, but I did notice the guy. And all it took was him to slide his phone across the table and say, put your number in it. And it was like that simple. And we've been together ever since. But I just think about like the beginning part and like where it all started, because like God's funny. Like God was working in my life long before I knew it. You know what I'm saying? Like those spiritual awakenings that we're more prone to hear today and see today. Like he was working in my life, you know, like when I was in a trap house, like just sweating for the means to get the next one. And you know, I think back and I remember being in that last treatment, and you know, like my story has never been, I want to go to rehab. I went to rehab because probation asked me to go to rehab. I went to rehab because the trap house was getting hot in the summer and there's no AC. I went to rehab because the guy was in jail and my means were getting slim. Like I never went. And like the last time I went, it was because, you know, in 2015, August 1st, 2015, my brother got into a car accident and died. And I remember I had like 30 days out of treatment before that. No program, no structure, no IOP. Like, I literally always went into treatment thinking the drug was the problem. I didn't know, like, I was the problem. And when I say that, like, it's my mind, right? And, like, that, to be honest, that shit hasn't gone away. Like, there are some days where, like, I look at my husband and I'm like, I'm gonna need you to love me a little extra today, which means, like, strap up, it's gonna be rough. But, like, I never thought, like, it was my mind, because, like, I lived in a fantasy land for so long. Like, just so long, and, like, you know, it's so in-depth to the point that, like, I'll, just this past weekend, Memorial Day, you know, we're with my family, and I'm telling this story, and my mom's like, that never happened, and I'm like, what do you mean? Like, that absolutely happened, and it was, like, a funny, good story, and she was like, yeah, that never happened, but, like, my fantasy world was what I lived in, and, like, today, because of Narcotics Anonymous, I don't have to live a fantasy, because the reality's amazing. And that's all because of this program and the principles that it taught me. So, you know, like, I got out of treatment, I had like maybe 30 days, and I get this call, and the call's like, hey, like, do you know where your brother is? It's the police. I'm thinking my mom turned me in, because I always was on the run. I always owed money. I always was ditching court, like the whole nine. And I went to the house, and like, I knew when I went there what the end result was gonna be. Like, I knew they were gonna tell me my brother was dead. And I immediately did what any good addict does with no program, no understanding, no helpline. Like, I went and I used. And I used, and I tell this to people, and like, I had a sponsee recently that lost a loved one. And she said to me, please tell me something. Tell me something that I don't go out and get high today. And I said, my biggest regret, and I've done a lot of effed up shit in my life, my biggest regret is not feeling the death of my brother. Because that is the final send-off of love, and I have no recollection of it. Instead, I ended up in a hospital because I overdosed. I can tell you with the utmost assurance that it doesn't matter how much drugs you take, how high you think you can get, you will never stop pain. You gotta ride that wave out. That is my biggest regret. I wish I could have sat there in the funeral with my mother and my son and my family and cried and felt that. That was my baby brother. And instead, I hid in a bathroom smoking crack. Like, who smokes crack in a funeral home? Like, only bathroom in the place. And you ain't coming in because I'm paranoid. And I'm looking for that last piece I dropped. Like, literally carpet surfing on hardwood floor. Like, it's gonna pop up. It ain't coming. And like, the other thing I learned is, like, I'm also a woman that has mental health. Like, having anxiety and smoking crack, not a good look. Like, you're always gonna be paranoid. The cops are always coming to your house. Mm-hmm. And like, I just remember that. And I remember waking up in the hospital, and I remember there was a cop there, so I really don't know what I did. And I just remember saying, like, I gotta go, I gotta get to the funeral. He was like, it's been over. You just came out of a coma. And still, in that moment, I thought, I need my purse, because I'm like MacGyver when I'm using with purses. Like, I cut these little traps inside, and like, I need my purse, and I just need to get high. I went back out for a little bit, but I realized, like, I was never gonna reach the point that I thought I needed to reach, you know? And I went into treatment, and I remember, like, again, didn't want to be there. I mean, my family was done with me. There was nowhere else to go. And I remember I went in and I started hearing things about Narcotics Anonymous, and I was like, what is that? Like, and she's like, you've been to treatment like 5 times. And I'm like, yeah, but what is that? But that's like that God moment. Like, God lined me up in the right position that I was ready to hear a message. So I went, and like, I came in, and like, you know, for me, I can sit here and tell you all the reasons. So let me take that back. Me in 2016 could tell you all the reasons why I got high. I can sit here and tell you that my stepfather molested me for years. I can sit here and tell you that I came up in a broken home. I can sit here and tell you that I wasn't as good as my brother. I can sit here and tell you that that guy broke my heart. But the reality is I was an addict because I was born with this disease. And different things happened along my life, and I made the choice to pick up. And then the choice was taken. Then it was I had to use. I had to use it every single day. But it started like, I don't blame the things that have happened to me. Because I am so grateful. This is so crazy, and it gives me goosebumps every time I say it, man. I'm grateful for all that mess. I am so grateful that I went through all this shit I went through, because You know, I heard a speaker the one time say, like, we're given two lives. You know, our life in active addiction and our life in recovery. And I like that saying, like, I really do. It, like, resonated with me. But, like, for me, I live three lives. I live this life before the disease of addiction really took over, where I was extremely ungrateful for everything. I was spoiled, like, spoiled. And that's like that once too many, a thousand is never enough. If I went shopping on Monday, I wanted to go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all the way through. It was never enough for me. And then, like, I had my life in active addiction. You know, I remember someone saying to me, the first time I got introduced to speak in Pittsburgh, she was like, oh, this is Nicole, like, we met when we lived together in a trap house. I was like, I lived in a trap house? I was like, we had water. Like, I didn't know, like, when, like, 15 people live in one house and get high, it's a trap house. Who would have thought? But, and then, like, I have this life today. And this life is amazing. And it's literally not because of the things that I have. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, is it great to have a car that I can get myself to work? Yeah, because I blew in an interlock for 2 years. You want to talk about humility. Being stuck on 376 traffic with, like, everybody can see through your window and you're blowing in, like, I had, like, the dinosaur version. So, like, you couldn't even, like, duck or hide. Everybody got, like, the vape size now. I had, like, the dinosaur. And, you know, like, I had to do that for 2 years. Like, I didn't have a license since 2009. So the fact that I could actually have a vehicle that was in my name and not my mother's name or whoever's name was, like, that was huge for me. Being employable, like, that's amazing. But, like, the true blessing for me, like, man, like, do you ever just, like, get up in the morning and just everything lines up? Like, and not, like, you just, like, look outside and, like, it's just, like, a beautiful day. And you just take this breath and you're like, man, it's a good day. Nothing even happened yet. Just the fact that we opened up our eyes and, like, didn't have to, like, rush to the phone and figure out me, like, that, it's a beautiful day. And, like, my husband, right? I would not know that man if not for Narcotics Anonymous. And by no means am I telling anybody to get into a relationship before a year. I'm not gonna tell you that. I will tell you that we went through some shit. But we made the choice time and time again to remain together, and it is the best choice I've ever made. I can tell you that you're gonna go through a lot if you haven't yet. I mean, and here's the kicker. When I first came in, I thought of step work as homework. So, like, I really didn't want to do it. Like, I would, like, skim through the literature and, like, talk real cool in meetings. And, like, I'd, like, quote, like, you know, portions of the book. And I thought that was it. And then you tell me about you having a God. And I would see you living happy, joyous, free. And, like, oh, like, people would come in. Like, there's a man. I won't say his name because I know it's against. But he was a man that came in from day one. He had, like, 20 years. And he'd have, like, big, like, catastrophic bombs going off in his life, and he'd be like, I know God got me. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? That's serious. Like, what do you mean? But he would say it, and he would live it. He wouldn't just come into a meeting saying, this is going on, and God got me. Like, he would continue to walk with God throughout the whole process, and then he'd come in, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I get it. But, like, I had a God because you had a God. And then let me tell you what happened. Hello. Let me tell you what happened. Like, 2 years in, some shit happened. I had no God. Didn't do my homework. I had a sponsor. But, like, I wasn't getting honest with my sponsor because, you know, honesty is the fundamental part in all this. And I wasn't honest about anything from my homework, step work, to the fact of me praying every day. That I knew this, I had this relationship with my God. So when it came down to it, and it's just me in my home with drugs in front of me, and I will never forget this moment for the rest of my life. Like, I get goosebumps. Like, it's crazy because I know this was the day that God, that I let God in, because God was always there. It was whether or not I was willing to let him in. And, like, I remember that day, and I'm sitting there, and, like, death looked better. I didn't want to use, but, like, I wanted to die. And, like, self-harm for me came in long before a drug. Self-harm was, like, the first thing. That's why I started getting tattoos on my arm to cover them up. But I remember, like, sitting there and being like, I want to die. Like, this is, I don't want to do this. Like, this is what the hell I got clean for? Are you kidding me? You know, poor me. It only happens to me. And I remember standing in my living room, and we had hardwood floors, and I hit my knees, and it wasn't me hitting my knees. Like, I know that sounds crazy, and I know that sounds weird, but I promise you, like, it was like something placed me there. And I could feel it. Like, I can still feel it when I talk about that moment. Like, my knees, I could feel it radiate through my knees. And I was like, God, please help me, because I can't do this on my own. Like, I can't. And, like, for me to tell you that life, you know, instantly got better, no, but I got through that moment. I didn't get high. I did not get high. For the first time in my life, I did not go to a drug to stop a feeling. And, like, every day it got, it was hard. Like, I'm not going to sit here. 6 months sucked. 6 months sucked bad. And I'd say in the morning, but like, we still got to live life. We got kids and we got families and we have all these responsibilities that we learned in a program to be accountable for and to show up no matter what. And guess what? The bills still come in the mail. Even if I'm having a bad day, they still expect to get paid every month. So like, I still had to go and do all these things. So I gave myself 20 minutes of tears every day. Whether I broke that up 10 in the morning and 10 at night, I got 20 minutes to feel sorry about myself and suck it up and go. And that was when, like, I truly started understanding what this program was. I went to a meeting every day, no matter how tired I was. I went to a meeting every day, and I'm the most unattractive crier in the world. Like, it is like, it is nasty. It is like, it's so terrible. And I would bust out in tears in these meetings, and like, people would come up to me and hug me and tell me, like, I'm not gonna tell you it's gonna be okay tomorrow, but I'm gonna tell you that if you don't get high, it will be. See, that's the thing. I wanna know if I don't get high today, it's gonna be okay tomorrow. That's how I was. No, it's every day. I had to surrender every single day. Every day. And guess what? Like, it's so funny because, like, it's not funny, but it is funny. When I sit here and I think about where I'm at, because, like, my sponsor teaches me to ground myself, right? So right here in this moment, I feel great, right? Now, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when I was standing in a different moment that I thought my life was over, if I had made that choice to use, I wouldn't be here. And I don't even think about that shit anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything, I tell my sponsees all the time, like, I used to say, like, man, if this didn't happen to me, my life would be completely different, or I wish that didn't happen to me. But it all fills our timeline. You take out those horrific moments, those heartbreaking, life-shattering moments, you change your entire timeline. Everything's different. Everything. So, like, I'm okay with it today. My littlest is a blessing from God. I'm going to spell this. He's not my biological. I just said it. I was thinking about spelling B-I-O. Okay. Yes, I'm blonde. So he's not my biological. He doesn't know what that means anyways. But like, what are the chances, like, that I came in and I remember, like, the one thing, like, when people ask me, like, what do you want? And like, I've always said, like, I want a family. Like, that's it for me. Love is it for me. Like, I love to love. Love to love. And like, my oldest son, like, I put him through the ringer, and I'll get to that, like, put him through the ringer. And I met this man, and he has this child's on the way, and God rest his other one's soul, she's in heaven. But what are the chances? Like, what are the chances? Only in Narcotics Anonymous, I guess. But like, what a blessing. Like, I can't imagine my life without those two in it. I can't imagine. And like, this is coming. Like, my favorite part about recovery is recovery has given me the opportunity. Because it hasn't given me. Recovery gives us the tools. What we do with them to create the opportunities is completely up to us. But recovery gave me the tools and the principles to be able to say today, and I do not say this with ego, like I always start out with that this is an ego, because I've worked hard to say this, worked in action. I am an amazing mother today. Now, do I fall short a lot, cuss them out, probably do some stuff I shouldn't? Yeah, of course. But from the heart to the feet, I am an amazing mother today. So when I think back to what I put my oldest through, it's mind-blowing to me, because that's how good addiction is. That's how good this disease is. It'll tell you that your children are an inconvenience. It'll tell you that you can get clean on their third birthday, their fourth, their fifth, and you ain't missing shit. It'll tell you all of that. Next Christmas, we're gonna do it. Next Christmas, when next Christmas comes, I'm gonna go to rehab in October. Come December, I'll be good, I'll be employed, I'll get them a gift. Next Christmas. I spent 15 years on the next. 15 years. And like, for me, like, it doesn't get any better than loving my children. That's the best thing in the world. And this disease told me it wasn't. You know, I tell people, when I wrote my fourth step, like, I don't know if I was stupid. I'm gonna say stupid. I was like, oh, this ain't shit. I didn't listen to, like, oh, don't worry about the fourth step. I didn't listen to that. I was like, it's homework. I'm gonna do it. You know, and I remember, like, putting this stuff all out on paper. And I remember there's one thing I did with my oldest son. And I don't use it to make me feel guilty or shameful. I do it to remind myself, the minute I pick up, that is the mother I will be, guaranteed. It can be one bag, one hit, one beer, one anything. The moment I pick up one of anything, that is the mother I will be. So this memory, and I say it in all my leads, you know, I pick my son up from school, and now mind you, this is before, like, I was like where I was at the end. This is like way before. He was 3 years old. I pick him up from daycare. I decided to stop and get something from somebody on the way home because I'm tired and I'm a better mom when I do this. And I need this so I can come home and get him ready and give him a bath. Like, I can't, I will be a bad mother if I don't do this. Crazy. So I stop and I pick it up and we're driving in the car. And again, anxiety and cocaine don't go well. And I'm looking out the window. Oh God, looking out the window, looking. I see lights. I see this, blah, blah, blah. By this point, I'm so paranoid. I'm not going home because at this point, I was living with my mother. And she's going to know. And it's going to F up my high. Meanwhile, my high was F'd up after the first one because I have anxiety. And I'm driving. So we go to Burger King. And I shove food down his face. And he was hungry then, right? Well, I thought I wasn't done yet. So then we went to McDonald's and I got him a milkshake. And it's all over him. He's like two, going on three. He was still in diapers at this time. I'm not done yet. So we go to another fast food place. And at this point now I'm out, but I'm paranoid, so I gotta go get more. So at the end of this, I took him to so many fast food places. So many. He threw up all over himself from one crying and two from me like shoving candy and ice cream and food in his mouth, and he's throwing up and he's crying and he's sobbing and then he's choking because he's crying. And then when I finally, it was like, mind you, I picked him up probably like 3. We didn't get home till about 9 hours of me torturing my child for the next one. And when we got home and I picked him up and I took him out of the car seat, his diaper just fell off. Because if you're a parent, you know, like, the beads in the diaper, they just fall off. And I didn't care. But I remind myself of that because when I first came in and I had to write my first four step, I cried like a baby. It still brings me to tears, and that's okay. Like, not tears that I'm going to feel guilty and shameful and I'm going to go out and use over it. But it brings me to tears because I love my children. But in that day, in that disease, I did not. And my son today, he's 15. And, you know, I tell people this all the time, like, it was uncomfortable. And I hate saying it, but this is the truth. There was a major disconnection from me and my child when I came in. That is 100% honest. I remembered him being 3. I came in and he was 8 going on 9. So when I said his name, I couldn't understand that he didn't look the same. And there was a disconnection there for me, not for him probably. Well, probably actually, yeah, because he didn't trust anything I said. But there was a disconnection there. And then I'm here and I'm parenting another child and I'm loving this child unconditionally. And the disease is like, wow, I told you, look at you go again. Look at what you're doing again. And it was hard. for the first 2 years, it was hard. At the very beginning, for me, being a good mother was going to meetings. I didn't come home this time and say, this is my child, I want him, because I've learned through this program, mother is a title earned, not a title given. I had to learn that. I had to learn that I had to be patient and understanding and trust this process, which it's, man, when I was like ungrateful in the beginning, like, don't talk to me about gratitude. Like, I'm pissed. Like, don't tell me to be patient. Like, I don't even know what that means. But like, just because I didn't believe it, and I didn't at the beginning, like I really didn't. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just didn't. That's not my story. But I did it anyways. I did it anyways. And like, for me today, I think about every, what I thought was like cliche thing in the beginning. Keep coming back just for today. You know, and I remember thinking, that is so cliche. Like, go put it on a bumper sticker. And today, like, there's days where it's rough. Like, some days are just rough. It's not a bad day. It's just rough. But guess what? It's life on life's terms. I didn't understand that concept. You know, like, I didn't understand that the drug was so much more powerful than I ever gave it credit for. I didn't understand that this disease, and like today I call that, like, when I'm having one of those days, it's the dis-ease of my disease. Because my disease is always waiting. It's just always waiting for me to fall short. And like, I don't do anything different than when I first came in, because I don't want to give up this amazing life that I've worked so hard to get. Doesn't mean it's perfect. Like, I remember the one time, and I remember this girl said, I want your life, it looks so good. And I laughed at her. And I actually just talked to her the other day, we were talking about this. She goes, your life looks so good. I said, oh, you mean that highlight reel on Facebook I like to give you, that good stuff. And she goes, yeah, your life, it's just perfect. I want your life. And I said, at that time, my husband was using, I lost my job. I was one of those people in COVID that didn't get unemployment for 5 months. I racked up every credit card to stay afloat. Hey, mom, I need money. And I hated my life. And I was like, oh, you want my life? Go ahead. Trust me, you can take this portion. But like, but it's funny because like, I have to be mindful. Like, I don't mind. By any means do I mind sharing my shit. And I'd stick myself with women that don't mind sharing their shit. I'm not gonna ever sit up here and say I have the perfect marriage, the perfect job, the perfect kids. I mean, my son said the F word probably before mama, I don't know, because we're in NA and we swear a lot. But like, I don't have a perfect anything. But I always have an opportunity to make it a good day. I wish I could say that, like, you know, immediately life turned around for me, but it didn't. You know, it was a lot of creating the same facade and fantasy I did in my addiction. I can tell you that, and a big portion of my defects is vanity. I'm not going to lie. There are days I got to change 15 times to get out the door. There are days that I don't go out the door because those 15 times still didn't make it happen. I can tell you that I can tell my spiritual condition when I look in the mirror. I can tell when I look in the mirror what kind of day and what I need to do that day to put myself in check. Because if I look in the mirror and I see anybody other than Nicole, there's something wrong there. You know, because my exterior does not define my interior. But that's how my disease comes and gets me. Like, my poor husband, like, I've put, so, like, if I was really codependent when I came in. You moved, I moved. You went to this meeting, I went to this meeting. You're telling me it's a male meeting, I'm sitting outside in the car waiting for you to come out. Like, I'm not afraid to say that I was, like, really codependent. And, like, and it was interior work, right? So, like, if God forbid you were on the phone and you were on the phone and you were both laughing at your phone the same time, y'all two were talking. I just know it. I know you're planning some sneaky shit right now. Right in front of me too, how dare you? And then get in the car and just like run them over with my mouth. And like those are things that I really had to work on. Because I can act like I'm okay. where I'm at in a room by myself is the true testament of where I'm at. So, but it was rough, you know, and I know that everything that I learned early on has fundamentally placed me on this path. I know that I have a marriage built on the principles that Narcotics Anonymous taught me. Not my mom, not my dad, not my friends. It's the principles we're talking about: love, kindness, compassion, patience, all of these things. And if I apply those principles into the rest of my life, it's going to be okay. I know today I get to make a choice at any time. If something's not serving me, I can move different. That freedom piece, to move my feet when it is no longer serving me, is so important. Like, these are the choices we're given. I protect myself today. Like, the women in my life are amazing. They're amazing. Some of them I don't see every day, you know? Some of them I talk on the phone to every day, but like when I'm struggling, I show up and they show up. And I did not know that commitment meant a pledge and a promise of purpose to another person. I did not know that. I got on this principles meeting, and it talks about it's a pledge to another person. And when I thought about that, I really took a long look at the relationships in my life. Do I pledge to you with purpose, love, and compassion? Do I do that? And do you do that to me? Do you know what I mean? Like, some days I can't fill the cup up for myself. Some days I can't fill your cup. But like, the understanding of commitment to one another, to be there when times get rough, that's like the true commitment. Is that going to hit me?
No.
Okay. That's my luck, seriously. You know, I'd like to sit here and say that, like, I just said this to somebody the other day. Do you ever get to a point where you're like, I've arrived as a good person? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I said that to, I was doing my eighth step with my sponsor, and I said, yeah, I gotta tell you something. I was like, the other day someone was really mean to me, and I was like totally insulted because I'm a good person. And she's like, well, what do you think that means? And I was like, well, I'm a really good person. Like, I'm really nice. Like, this is uncalled for and ridiculous that this person treated me like this. And I was like, oh my God. Like, that thing where you think you arrive in NA, they didn't tell you, like, you think you arrive as a good person. But I just was remembered being like totally appalled by it, and like these defects in me. Like, when I got on that step, do you ever like get to the point where like you know you're about to do some shit that's a defect and you do it anyways? Like, you just can't stop yourself. You know what I mean? I was like, oh man, I gotta go back to this step. I see myself, I see what I'm doing, but I gotta do it anyways. I do that on a regular basis. And it's okay. Like, I don't ever want to be perfect. At the beginning, like, I really wanted to be perfect. I wanted you to like me. I wanted to know why you didn't like me. And if you didn't like me, I would actually become friends with you, let you treat me like shit, because if one day you like me, that's okay. Like, I would, the quantity of people around me way overshadowed the quality. And like, I actually just did that recently. I just was in a relationship recently where I allowed somebody that I said I love you to. Because when I tell you I love you, like, that's just not some bullshit for me. Like, I love you. Like, I love you. If I say that to a friend, like, I mean that shit. Like, I love you. I love you. I hope you have a good day. I love you. If you need me, call me. I love you. No matter what's going on, I'm here. I love you. And like, I said that to this person, like, I love you. And I kept showing up in the friendship and showing up in the friendship, and I got crushed. And then finally I was like, what the hell am I showing up in this friendship for? So I love you, but do I love me? And that's what happens. Like, sometimes I just want to be loved so badly that I will settle to be treated less than I know I deserve today. I'm not asking for, like, you know, sunshine and freaking rainbows every day from you, but like, little things. Don't talk about me. Don't take me out of my name. Like, it was funny, like I said to my husband, I gotta say this, Nikki, she messaged me, and I'm so grateful she asked me to be here, because I love stuff like this. I love coming and like fellowship, and everybody's like in their element, and we get to hang out, and there's like no rush. But she says to me, I was like, thank you for thinking of me. Thank you. And she goes, "You're an inspiration." I was like, "Who?" I was like, "That's crazy. Like, people called me a junkie, a loser, a bum, whatever else. I was never called that, but because of Narcotics Anonymous, we're given the opportunity to be something other than what we were. We are given the opportunity to be who God intended us to be. Not who we, over the years, ended up being, but who God intended us to be." And I know it's far from over. Like, this ride, it's going to keep going. And all the things that I thought, like, that I would never tell a soul. Like, the fact that I can stand up here today and tell you that I was molested for many years is crazy. I was going to the grave with that shit. Nobody was ever going to know. Now, I will tell you why the steps are in place. When I went to make an amends with my mother, and I still wasn't at that point of spirituality where they say, harm you or someone else. When I did that amends with my mother, I blamed her. It wasn't my mother's fault. By no means was it my mother's fault. But, like, because of Narcotics Anonymous, I sleep with my door open. And I know that might sound whatever, but for many years, I always locked my door. I always made sure my bedroom door was locked. It was always closed. And over the last couple years, like the last year and a half, 2 years, I started just unlocking it and it was shut. And then I opened it up a little bit, and now I sleep with the door wide open. The AC's loud as hell. The fan's blowing. Like, I don't have to live like that where I'm wondering if someone's going to come in and hurt me. I don't have to hurt my husband or anybody in my life because some other man hurt me, because it ain't his fault. It ain't his fault. But when they say don't bleed on people that didn't cut you, I was bleeding all over everybody. Like, you're the one that held the knife in your hand. But because of Narcotics Anonymous, I get to sit here and say this. I said all my shit on my four-step long before the four-step. I said it in a meeting. You just get up here and it just, because it's God. It's not us. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, God, I can't believe I just said that. I got to duck out the back door. But, yeah, like this program's great. Whether you got 24 minutes, 24 hours, 24 years, welcome. Whether you think you have a drug problem or you don't have a drug problem, you do have a drug problem, you have a shopping problem, hey, that's me, you should see it. Welcome. And if, like, today you didn't even know if you were going to come, or if last night you thought about using, and, like, you came here today, I hope I F that shit up for the disease. I hope that's what I did, because that is what I try to do. And thank you, guys. Love ya.
Guys, thank you, Nicole. We're gonna close with a serenity prayer. Before the second speaker is when we're gonna do all the drawings and the 50-50. So get it in while you can. There's still food and merchandise to be bought. All right. God.
Lord God, grant me serenity to accept the things that cannot change, courage to change the things that can, and wisdom to know that
Amen. Amen.